Hi folks, Nick here, and welcome into this special sub-series of Flourish FM on anti-fragility. Throughout the course of our discussions with experts from around the world on various topics related to human flourishing, one consistent theme comes up time and time again, and that is kind of the willingness to say yes to or engage in unpleasant or sometimes adverse or air quotes negative experiences. So we decided to dive into this topic a little bit more deeply by chatting with some people from our lives that are highly successful, live what we think are anti-fragile lives, happen to be kind of just parents, right? Family people, living sort of the normal existence as well, and really see what we can learn from them about the lived experience of anti-fragility, the ability to not just bounce back from adverse scenarios, but actually grow from it, and maybe in some cases even thrive through it, or at least because of it. In this opening episode, we are talking with Peter Goldstein. Peter is a great guy, a seasoned entrepreneur, capital markets expert, and an investor with over 35 years of diverse international business experience. Throughout his career, he's been a CEO, a chairman, an investment banker, a founder, a board member, an investor, you name it. He's done it. And his achievements include things like capital market specializing and equity financing, strategic planning, transaction structuring. But most recently, and maybe most importantly, he is the founder of Exchange Listing LLC, which is dedicated to facilitating growth companies' listings on exchanges like NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange. So in other words, he helps companies go IPO and understand how to go IPO. He is also the founder of MS Capital, a specialized boutique fund investing in global small and micro cap pre-IPO growth companies. So in addition to all of that, Peter is a father of two, a really good guy. He's extremely thoughtful around topics like well-being and performance and resilience, and I think just a great example of anti-fragility. So here it is. We hope you enjoy our conversation on anti-fragility with Peter Goldstein. What's happening, boss? How are we doing, Peter?
Good. How are you, Nick?
Good. Good. Good to see you. How's your day going?
Yeah, it's full.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Been looking forward to chatting with you.
Same, 100%.
Well, let's take just a couple of minutes and just talk through kind of context and what this might look like or how this might feel. I want this to be beneficial and useful time for you as well. You're the first of this sub-series, right? And so I'm coming in with ideas that I'm not glued to. And so if we want to deviate and we're jamming in a certain direction or feeling a good vibe, like I want us to feel the freedom to go that way. Ideally, we will, I think I kind of said it in the email, just, you know, sort of barbershop style, end up shooting the shit and kind of converse around the topic of anti-fragility and what that means to you and what I think some of the science says and how you've kind of lived that way or had experiences that exemplify that. And kind of a back and forth, chiming in with a little science, sharing a little story, hopefully dropping some tidbits that help people who are listening. It's like, it's really that simple. And however we get there, I'm cool with.
Yeah, it all sounds good to me. I mean, I'm just like going with the flow. And what is your definition of anti-fragile? Just, I'm curious just to frame that for me.
Sure. Let's start with, I think, kind of Nassim Taleb's original definition, which is things that grow from disorder or chaos, or you and I share some common language like VUCA, V-U-C-A, volatile, unpredictable, complex, ambiguous, right? In other words, like adverse scenarios. So it's a step beyond resilience. You've got fragile, crumble in the face of difficult things or adversity. You've got resilient, bounce back from adverse things. And then you've got anti-fragile, actually grow from and become whatever language we want to put on it, better, stronger, more refined, more disciplined, but you actually see improvements as a consequence of the adversity itself. Right. And just to remind kind of our listeners, the reason we're taking a deep dive into this is in our conversations with experts from around the world on Flourish FM, this topic keeps coming up. It's not, hey, flourishing means constant pleasantness. It's not just unrivaled hedonism. There's some of that, which we'll get into when we talk about well-being a little bit. But there's very much a, listen, you want to flourish and thrive in whatever you do. Ideally, you have some skill sets and experiences and capacities to navigate the shit along the way.
Yeah, cool.
And so you're a perfect person to talk to, I think, right? And I think I'll say it for you so you can remain your naturally humble self. But I think you know you are, right? The right person to talk to about these sort of things. And so that's what I want to dig into with you.
Happy to do it. And, you know, for me, just to say before we get deeper, it's also a great opportunity for me to talk about things that in the past I wouldn't have felt comfortable nor wanted to talk about. So that by its own right is part of my own demonstration of being anti-fragile, right? It's like, you know, there's some value in embracing and talking about all the hardship. And it's good. I'm finding a new kind of release on the opportunity to embrace that by itself and then take that out where before it was locked down. There's no talking.
Yep. 100%. And that's a good place to, I think, immediately just mention some of the nuance here where you're right. That's a perfect example of anti-fragility. And one of the things I didn't mention about this idea, we don't think it's like just traditional mental toughness or suck it up sort of attitude where just nothing bothers you, right? And so to your point, if at any point we hit a topic, a story, a conversation that's going deeper or more personal or whatever it might be than you might want to, I'm not asking that you just suck it up and be anti-fragile when we get there. And keep in mind, like, I'll be doing some of the kind of overview, maybe even some of the editing if our team doesn't do it. So we can always pause, cut, stop, reword things. Like, we have total creative freedom in how we do this and how we pace it out and how we edit it.
Cool. I'll leave that up to you and cohorts, but good to go.
So let's start with that question you asked, I think. I mean, I told you how I define anti-fragility. Does that definition or concept resonate? When you first heard the word, did you think about it a little differently?
No, I think I heard it the same. I think it's really more about, we all understand uncertainty is everywhere and fragility and anti-fragile play inside of that. It's more my language on embracing and being a part of the understanding that that is a constant. So in order to have a beyond what I would say adapting and resilient as a way of overcoming that. And, you know, it's kind of like the two sides of the coin. For me, I see it more as the possibility of what's available by not being stuck in a fragile or uncertain component of life and being able to move beyond. Resilient just doesn't do it anymore. Adapting maybe closer, but it's really about applying the actions necessary to rise above and to create kind of that infinite player status. So, you know, I'm dancing around. I don't think it's a refined, because I haven't really spent time on that as a topic or as a definition of what that would look like. So that's why I wanted to ask, to make sure I'm most definitely aligned. I think fragile as a word has a preconceived notion. And mm-hmm. then, so, you know, what's the opposite of that? It's just, you know, tough as nails kind of first comes up, but that's not it either. Because the toughness, to your point, just only takes you so far. And then it's beyond all that, which is really, you know, where I think the real payoff is.
Yeah. Dr. Adam Wright would always say it's about flexibility, not necessarily rigidity, right? Understanding values and having some containers and systems and structures, but having some flexibility within those things as well. You use the word adaptability also.
Yeah. Big one for me. I use that. So, and they're very close, right? So, yeah, I think that what I heard you say is going beyond resilience and growing better, stronger, you know, further is that piece where you can start off. And I can see different stages of this, right? Where look at my own scenarios. But I don't think I came in or had a definition, but I have a similar concept around it. First gut reaction, even when I first heard you mention, was okay, well, sounds almost like you're just overcoming, you know, that nervous, anxious, uncomfortable. But it's as we're digging in, as I've heard you and spent time around Adam, I know it's much deeper than that.
Yeah. You bring up, I think, an important point for anyone listening that even if we just start to immediately move beyond this sort of academic definition or conceptualization of it, I think a lot of people can likely tease out, especially as we age, tease out different life experiences, professional experiences, interpersonal experiences, where ideally they've had to do that in some way, shape, or form. And so I guess my next question would be, even if you hadn't stopped to think like, oh, what is this thing that I'm doing or living or how I'm behaving? What do I call it? I think you would tell me, please correct me if I'm wrong, that you've tried to execute kind of anti-fragile living for a long, long time. I'm wondering, A, is that correct? Would you agree with that? And B, when do you think that started?
That's interesting. So yes, for sure. I think as humans, hope is akin to kind of an innate human nature, which leads to some form of resilience. But then there's the beyond that. And I think that's where the challenges come to rise above that adversity or those challenges or that uncertainty or even fragility. And so I live it. I didn't think at the time, like you're saying, some of the experiences that I know that I've had around hardship, that I would put any language or labeling around it. It was just about moving forward and finding ways to not get stuck in an old model or an old pattern or an old behavior and look at things differently, almost gamify things differently so that, you know, you're expanding the thinking so that you're not focusing on what got you there, but what can get you out of a hardship or a fragile situation. The most impactful one for me was around the time of the Great Recession here and where I went through the most extreme hardship, not just in one area of my life, but in multiple areas. So that's the first time that I could say I had a real conscious understanding. I have been an entrepreneur now for close to 35, 36 years. So entrepreneurship and anti-fragile go very closely together by the persona, right? And the characteristics of being an entrepreneur. I don't know that I would have equated that until I went through extreme hardship. And that took then a different set of understanding of how to take meaningful action and implement changes that are beyond just setting intentions and setting goals. Now it's because I think what happens, Nick, is that there are situations that come that are planned, that you know you're making a change, launching this podcast. It's either you're walking into uncertainty, but you're planning to do that versus, I don't know, take one, the pandemic, right? We didn't plan. So in separating those, then I think there's also distinctions that are available inside of planned and unplanned.
Yeah, it makes me think of, I think it's Paul Bloom, the Yale psychologist, that talks about the distinction between suffering and chosen suffering. That chosen suffering might be associated with things like meaningful pursuits. You're a parent. Right? Choosing to have children is not necessarily a foray into increased happiness for a lot of folks, but it is a foray into increased meaning for a lot of them, right? What's the phrase? The years are fast, but the days are long sort of thing, right? Lots of love, lots of meaning, but lots of challenges and difficulty, right? Whereas if that is thrust upon you or maybe happens accidentally or you don't choose it, it could be a very different perceived experience and a very different emotional experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's then the mindset is different depending on how, whether it's planned versus unplanned. And I think one of the big differences there is the resolve of choosing to go in something or the resolve of finding your way to work through the obstacles that come that are unforeseen. And to answer your earlier question, I think it's when I was really facing obstacles that were unforeseen beyond the scope of what I had ever experienced. And that was when I really could say I consciously would be able to now use the language and say that I would think of that as an anti-fragile approach.
Up until that point, right, at the recession, where it sounds like sort of the threshold, right, the peak, if you will, of sort of requirements of anti-fragility, if you will, out of yourself, right? Do you think, even if you weren't conscious of it, leading up to that point in your life, you had had lots of practice and some of the sub-skills or subsets of being anti-fragile or overcoming adversity? That might be perspective taking, that might be being resilient, that might be overcoming failure, that might be maintaining optimism amid rejection, right? Those sorts of things. Can you see lots of small dots that have sort of, you know, you've collected and then connected to lead to that point during the recession?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's true about just life in general, that everything builds on top of your experiences, your collective knowledge, ultimately leading towards wisdom. For me as an entrepreneur, you know, I started my first business when I was 24 in New York City in the food industry. And so, you know, you have to have certain grit and toughness into that, right? So, but that was really also where there was a goal, there was some structure to it, there was a plan, and I was entering into executing upon that. But I have stories on top of stories, like just one that I remember now, that it was very critical. I served the 5-star restaurants in New York City, and there was one of the most, you know, worldly recognized entities that I could not get as a client. And part of my goal was if I could get that client, then it would open up new opportunities for me. And I just remember going week after week with a cup of coffee. I found out when the guy would get to his office, and I'd be standing out there. And this went on and on and on with a particular mindset of I want to accomplish a goal, right? So that was really a different kind of a circumstance, right? So there are strategies around wanting to produce results and strategies around wanting to reach goals and objectives. And some of those just require, you know, that grit or anti-fragile thinking and approach. So that started in my 20s, Nick, right? So I'm 60 now. So have there been, you know, a trail of crumbs when I was in my 50s, when, you know, when the Great Recession came? So leading up until then, that's why I equate the entrepreneur with this anti-fragile approach, because we are comfortable, I think, more than maybe others in embracing what is inevitable, which is uncertainty, right? You know, business as an entrepreneur is always faced with the potential of both success and failure. So there's a lot of strength that gets built up through now a 35-year, you know, experience as an entrepreneur in varied capacities, you know, in different parts of the world and in different industries.
So I'm super curious. You said 24, around age 24, yes. You were when all of this was happening, 24, yeah. 25, right? So you're literally, brain's just stopped, slowing down its development, right? You're leaving adolescence. It's an interesting time. I believe both of your kids are within a handful of years of that age at this point, correct? You have a son and a daughter. I'm curious, because we're going to get into the parenting piece at some point. We want to try to provide, I think, thoughts and ideas and content that can help people think about how anti-fragility might apply to parenting or coaching or whatever it might be as well. But I'm curious, like, it's hard for me to imagine 24-year-old Peter just one day, poof, I'm optimistic and I'm hopeful and I wrote down relentless and gritty and strategic, like that came from somewhere. And maybe it's just always been your disposition. Maybe you'll say, Nick, I was that way in high school, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I'm just curious, do you think any of that was, for lack of a better phrase, programmed into you, right? Through parenting, coaching, teaching, mentorship, even before age 24?
You know, it's really interesting. I've had, my mother's 94, Nick, okay. And I've had this conversation with her repeatedly. Trying to get to the source, and we can trace it back that, you know, when I was a young child, I would want to hustle. I had the inevitable, you know, entrepreneur's classic story of, you know, the paper route. You know, I would shovel snow in the winter. I would rake lawns, you know, I would mow lawns. So that was really ingrained in me. My parents weren't entrepreneurial. My mother was, you know, again, came over from Germany. We had a mentality in our house, and I was raised middle class. Hard work and the values of hard work had been ingrained in me from my parents, right? Predominantly.
Yeah, right.
And I think that would give me the impetus to say that there's a combination. Some of this is just my natural, like, this is who I believe I am, part of, you know, my makeup. The other is the value set that was ingrained in me specifically around hard work, you know, integrity. If you want to get something in this life, you have to go out and earn it.
So there were clear, explicit, not just lessons, but a profession of values within the home early on. Like, this is how we do things.
Yes. Yeah.
And you gravitate to that, as opposed, you know, a lot of young people will sometimes push back against or reject that. But that seemed to fit what it sounds like was maybe a natural disposition for you anyway.
I think so. Like, as far as back as I can remember, I always knew I wanted to be in business for myself. I didn't know what that would be. And so I would say that there was a piece of knowing that I would ultimately be following some entrepreneurial pathway, but not having a clear, you know, understanding outside of the hard work, the values. And I think coming from a middle class, you know, suburban New York Jewish family, that there was a desire for me to apply myself to something where I can excel and I can shine. But that, you know, was a little bit later towards my 20s when that came about. Prior to that, it was really, I didn't have that same internal drive and motive for going out and even setting upon, you know, starting the business that I did. So it's tricky to define, but I do believe in somewhere between value set, you know, drive and a passion around building and growing business. At that point, it was building and growing and producing results that gave me confidence, gave me, you know, kind of the rewards of hard work produced by my own applied energy, you know, intent, thereby outcome.
That sounds like some positive reinforcement that actually may have led to in some cases, craving the challenges and craving the obstacles. Like, in simple words, I would imagine most people can relate to, like, you get more satisfaction from the hard stuff that you do, not the easy stuff, right? For better or for worse. Maybe that's unfortunate, but it seems to be a reality, right? And it sounds like that certainly has been the case for you. So what happened to, so first of all, what was the restaurant business? And then what happened to it? What did you do after that?
So I had studied hospitality management. I got an opportunity to go work at the Rainbow Room in Manhattan when I was 23.
Cool.
When they had reopened, this is the top of Rockefeller Center in New York City, 53rd and 54th floor, both public and private. And at that point, they were reopening. And if you've ever been through a restaurant reopening, especially one of that visibility, it's incredibly intense. You're working 7 days a week. You're working 12, 14, sometimes longer hours. And the person that hired me had a bit of a nervous breakdown. And the then so-called, you know, top management in New York, you know, two individuals were at the top of their careers, gave me an opportunity at the age of 23 to become the director of operations. And so here I am at 23, director of operations in one of the most, you know, prestigious, renowned restaurants. And I did it for a year. I learned more in that year about how to manage and run and work efficiently in a very chaotic, highly variable environment. And I thrived in it. I also realized that that's not something that I want to do for the next, you know, 30, 40 years of my career. And there, knowing that I always wanted to work for myself, actually, on my 24th birthday, Nick, I went to City Hall on Center Street and got my first business license and started a business where the Rainbow Room became my first client because there was an opportunity that happened inside of some vendors going out of business and my relationship with management and with the chef. And I saw, and this is one of the fundamentals, I believe, as an entrepreneur, that there was a need in the market that was unfulfilled, right? So at the ripe age of 24, I took a leap of faith and I left my career track for what is the entrepreneurial track. And I've never looked back, you know, 36 years and change later.
I want to hear more about kind of the space in between kind of that moment in the recession or period and kind of starting out as an entrepreneur. Already, it seems like, and I want to throw this out to you, see if you agree or push back. I see hope. I see optimism, general belief, things will go well. I'll take the swing. I'll have the conversation. I'll stand outside with a coffee. I'll make the phone call. Hope is a bit more strategic, right? I think I have the volition, the agency, the pathways to do this, but these are cornerstones of resilience and anti-fragility, right? When shit hits the fan, do I believe it can get better? And do I think I have strategies to make it better, right? So it seems like inklings of these behaviors, even as you're starting out in the business world. Does that feel right? Is that how you've always functioned?
I think so. I think a lot of it gets learned, right? I think over time, you're cultivating an understanding of adaptability, right? Cultivating an understanding of risk assessment, whatever words you want to put at it, which is re-energizing yourself around your goals, you know, the missions and the strategy that you have. And I'm going to use this around business. That involves, yes, that mindset, Nick, that you're talking about. There has to be a positive mindset inside of all that. Combined, I think, with the resilience and the adaptability, that's part of the formula, which then blends with a little bit of experience, you know, some emotional intelligence, and that uncertainty, that embracing the fact that things are going to go wrong, things aren't going to go exactly as planned, and then managing that stress and that uncertainty to come out the other side with a better outcome than what was currently, you know, provided, right? So it's not any one of those. I think it's a combination of all of those for me that are the recipe inside of, you know, the anti-fragility component.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You've used the word embrace two or three times already, and it makes my head go to a term like acceptance, right? We may have chatted a little bit about acceptance commitment, right? Again, Adam's a big fan of it. Talk a little bit about, like, when you say adaptability, there's probably a slippery slope between adaptable or flexible and not having like identity or values or direction, right? You could potentially get really out of whack or incongruent if you don't have something sort of centering you, right? I'm wondering if you've dealt with that tension, right? Or it's just, listen, I'm going to figure it out. I know who I am. I know what I care about, and everything around that is bendable, is malleable, right? Because there's a big difference to me, and this is important, I think, for anti-fragility, between embracing uncertainty, embracing change, embracing difficulty, and potentially letting so much of that in that you lose yourself in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think it's in the category of what you resist persists, right? So embracing of it is, you know, I'm not going to fight the situation, whatever that may be, as opposed to, okay, let me embrace it, meaning accept, have some acceptance around it, and not try to be at odds or fighting with the circumstances, but then look to shift that to thrive in that uncertainty. To me, starts with accepting it and thereby embracing it, right? So, you know, that's I think the beginning and really what I've learned. I didn't learn that coming right out, that the end result of that embracing is then to come up with a shift in thinking. And it really becomes now a catalyst for me. Like, I see that now as opportunity, where maybe in the past when I was in it and, you know, you're in the forest and you can't see through, it's very daunting. Now it's a trigger for me to say, okay, step back, you know, rise above this, take a look, accept and embrace that. And especially right now, the world to me is as uncertain as it's ever been inside of the categories that we know, you know, geopolitical, you know, economic, you could pick your different listing of coming out of the pandemic, so on and so on. So in the speed at which things are going, you know, you've got now global connectivity, you know, that by itself is unsettling and creates uncertainty to tag on all the other components. So for being able to just accept that that's reality, this is what's kind of so. The world is moving at that kind of pace right now. You know, you can pick one. You can say, hey, Ukraine, you know, Russia, right? You know, Israel, you know, China, Taiwan, you know, North Korea, South Korea. That's just one aspect of geopolitical uncertainty. And then you can add all of the other pieces into that. So those, to me, are where innovation gets spurred and where a different form of thinking gets spurred. And I think the ability to embrace that is critical to being able to navigate, you know, going forward in a way that doesn't trigger, you know, the negative components of human behavior.
Does it trigger, you think, just the same amount of, let's say, stress, pressure, anxiety, nervousness, like healthy emotions for performance and for growth and in certain cases, right? We're not talking necessarily trauma inducing, although we can have a different conversation about that. But do you think approaching it eliminates those or reduces those, or it just changes your relationship with them and how you respond to them?
I think it's the latter. Like, I don't ignore the reality of, I'm a chairman of a company that the CEO and operations are based in Israel. We talk about it regularly. It's not ignoring or not accepting that those things are going on. It's the opposite. I'm not as reactive and I'm not as emotionally tied to those that it gets in the way of, you know, the bigger opportunities. But it does act, instead of a negative catalyst for me, an opportunity to shift the thinking into a positive component. And, you know, that's not 100%. When the Israel conflict started, it was very difficult. It was very hard, especially being, you know, a child of a Holocaust survivor. It triggered all kinds of things emotionally. But, you know, I think that's where the change comes in being able to accept that. Here's what's so, then move beyond that and kind of move beyond the status quo by shifting and expanding and exploring new ideas and the adoption of incorporating and embracing the fact that this is what's happening.
Hi friends, Nick here with just a brief interlude to share with you an update on one of our newest partnerships with the Anti-Fragile Academy. Throughout John and I's conversations with many, if not most, of our guests, one thing has been made really clear. In order for people to flourish, thrive, experience the good life, they need to develop the capacity to not only navigate and endure, but ideally grow from the bad, grow from unpleasant experiences. That's why we're thrilled to be partnering with our newest sponsor, the Anti-Fragile Academy, an organization that I co-founded with Dr. Adam Wright, Director of Mental Performance for the Washington Nationals. At the Anti-Fragile Academy, we work with adolescent athletes, executives, and educators to help them understand some of the science, not just of optimal performance, but of well-being and anti-fragility. The ability not only to endure and bounce back from unpleasantness, but to actually come back stronger, to grow from it. Between Adam and I, we've worked with Fortune 100 companies, Inc. 300 executives, Division I programs, and elite professional athletes and Olympians from all over the world. To find out more about how you can leverage anti-fragility training, check out our website at theantifragileacademy.com.
So to what extent, and I don't want to, you know, pry too much here, so you please put up whatever boundaries or walls you feel are appropriate, but to what extent, you know, if you'd walk us through maybe a little bit more of the detail of what happened during the recession and how you think that pivotal moment in your life really sort of taught you and informed how you wanted to take things on in the future. And then I want to kind of come back to what you're doing now and how you're doing it, because I think in your and I's separate conversations, it's been very clear to me, at least from my perspective, that you are intentionally kind of wielding anti-fragile attitudes and sort of like working against the grain in some cases as a sort of, it sounds like an evolution of your growth, right? In your story throughout life. And so I'm just curious the some of the details and the role that experience during the recession sort of played in all of this.
Yeah, I'm really happy to talk about it, Nick, which was not great. Historically the case. You know, I think that's a demonstration of being anti-fragile.
Yes.
And there was a time where I was ashamed. So to go backwards, I lost everything during the Great Recession. I had split all of my wealth in two areas, real estate and the capital markets. And the real estate that I bought was all high-end residential in South Florida, where I lived, and had been financed with all of my own money. And then the other side was I worked in the capital markets inside of the stock market and had the other half of my, you know, assets in capital markets. And never in our lifetime, never had I dreamed that a strategy where I hedged one against the other would end up in a situation where I lost everything. Mm. And that came with a real significant downslide of not just my financial losses. It went into personal. I ended up going through a very difficult divorce. I lost our family home. You know, I went through some significant health challenges. So I had like those list of life stressors that, you know, you say, here are the top 3, 4, 5. I had them all checked. During that period. This was after, I would say, a very comfortable lifestyle. Been that entrepreneur where I had made my own money and had family, kids, you know, and at that point, you know, was married. And
how old were the kids?
The kids were 9 and 11 years old.
Okay.
And they didn't know from hardship, right? It just, life was good. And private school and travel and, you know, just we were enjoying a very, very nice lifestyle. That changed very rapidly. It was within the course of a year to a year and a half. So, you know, in 10% of their life, they went from living extremely well to the entire family being disrupted along with the financial hardship. And so, you know, that then led to very uncertain times, not just financially, right? But personally, and then also in my own ability to look at myself and say, what type of leader or leadership opportunities do I have now in stepping through all of this to rebuild myself? And so one of those things that I see as one of the tips is like to learn those lessons from the failure, right? Learn the impact of managing personal relationships and uncertain times, and then reinventing oneself after a setback. And all three happened all at once. So, you know, I had to really kind of pull myself up and it took some time. There was also some health, you know, setbacks during that, and the stress took a real toll on me. And fortunately, you know, I caught it in time and had a stent put in my heart, and I'm fortunate to be here. So if you add one more into that, Nick, just to really dial things up, is you add in a near-death experience, now you have a whole different perspective of fragile and anti-fragile, right?
Yep,
so
yep, yep,
that
yep.
all occurred in the matter of, I would say, within a 3-year time span.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. Obviously, I'm somewhat aware of all of it, although we've never necessarily gotten into some of those details. And I'm sure it was a lot of truly, truly awful days. And I want to highlight for people listening that's an important thing to keep in mind when we talk about anti-fragility. I'm just going to keep rehashing it. It doesn't mean things are good all the time. It doesn't mean it's always suck it up. It doesn't mean that you always continue to thrive through difficult shit. It means leaning into, to use your words, Peter, embracing and accepting some of the difficult stuff. And then I think what I heard, again, I want you to push back here if you disagree, is it seems like you really have what we often talk about as a difference between a challenge mindset and a threat mindset, or an opportunity mindset versus a threat mindset. Like, there's this unpleasant, adverse scenario happening. It feels like crap. in a lot of ways. And at the same time, the language you said, how am I going to pull myself through it? How is this maybe in some way an opportunity to reinvent and actually better myself as a result of it? It's silver lining it. It's benefit finding. It's all that optimism, right? And that hope and that framing that we talked about earlier, I think. But you tell me if I'm reading this wrong.
No, you're reading it 100% right. And in addition to that, it's constant readjusting or recalibration. One of the things that I can share with you and with the listeners is it's now become ingrained in me that it is ongoing. Check where you are, look at the status, look at what other trends, metrics you want to be able to map that out and adjust again and again. Life is not static, right? Uncertainty is not static. Fragility is not static. And so in being able to constantly adjust and adapt was part of more than just a mindset, because I don't think mindset is enough to get you through, right?
So that's a perfect bridge. Let's talk how to a little bit, right? So I want to try to frame this. The way we would talk about anti-fragility, we're going to break it into three chunks, and maybe these chunks or categories will be useful for you and I just having a how-to conversation a little bit here. So category number one, well-being. So actively, thoughtfully, strategically taking care of your own well-being. And that often by requirement means taking care of other people's well-being and theirs of yours, because it's communal and relational in that. But build the good, let's call it, right? You mentioned physical health. Well, we can get into all that. Bucket number two, skills, techniques, tools for navigating the bad. That's the resilience piece, the ability to, at minimum, bounce back, ideally, even make the most of it, right? This might be perspective taking, acceptance, commitment, embracing, gratitude, meditation, right? A lot of those sorts of things. And then the third bucket would be performance. So maybe that's optimizing. I happen to know you're pretty diligent and organized, like you just said, about your goals and how you break down your day and those sorts of things, but different systems and routines that allow you to sort of maybe be your best, or for lack of a better phrase, your most productive self, right? Day to day, to move those balls forward. And then we're really talking about the synergy of those three things, right? So those three categories make sense, resonate. You got one you want to start with?
100%. I mean, we'll just take them in your order for me. I mean,
great.
Because I've really mapped out that well-being, I say it differently, is about self-care. I use the analogy of put your oxygen mask on first, so then you can take care of others. And so self-care, it is the place to start in that well-being bucket, right? You know, and that's also come from, you know, personal lessons and experiencing not just once, twice, but three times near death. And so I look at that as it's not an option, it's a necessity.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are your go-tos for self-care?
It's a blend. It starts with the exercise. I have varied exercise components that I do. You know, I mix strength training with yoga. I do Pilates. I do stretching on a regular basis, and then I do cardio inside of zone three cardio, 3 hours plus a week. And so I put in on average 7 to 8, maybe 9 hours a week into moving my body in a varied ways that are all beneficial and synergistic inside of taking care of the physical nature, you know, of my body.
Yeah. Yeah. You nailed kind of all three categories you'll commonly hear have pronounced positive effects. You've got sort of zone two cardio, right? You can barely have a conversation. I think it's 90 minutes a week, something like that, maybe a couple hours a week. You've got resistance, weight, body weight, something like that. Just move heavy stuff, even if it's yourself, right? In your own body. And then you've got HIIT, high intensity interval training, kind of scattered in there as well. I think it's 20, 30 minutes a week, something like that, right? So that's great. What else?
Diet comes next. Maybe should come first, but I like the exercise more than I like the diet part.
So. Sure. Yeah.
You know, the diet actually is very simple for me. I don't bring anything into my house that I don't want to eat. And so it's clean fuel, Nick, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, tonight I pulled out what I'm going to be making, a protein, you know, in this case, scallops I'm going to grill. I'm going to make a salad. I'm going to put some veggies on there. I eat very just whole grains, gluten-free. I eat very little red meat. I eat very little processed food. I have no sugar. And then I follow a bit of an intermittent fasting program. Right now, I'm doing also a 6-1 where I take one full day, 24-hour span, with nothing but some broth and some water and some fluids.
So it sounds like, and maybe it's both and, but we would often break down how you can approach any sort of well-being, performance, resilience skill in kind of three areas. So top down, thinking about your thinking, right? CBT, ACT, you know, gratitude, self-talk, journaling, meditation, et cetera. Bottom up, which I feel like you're describing a lot of here. So taking care of everything, maybe from the neck down, which is of course going to enhance everything from the neck up. And so this is exercise, you know, we can talk a little bit about nutrition, right? Sleep, those sorts of things, rest, recovery. And then the third bucket would be outside in, sort of social, environmental, surroundings, those sorts of things. So you've given us a few, maybe, you know, bottom up, if you will. You have go-tos in terms of top down or outside in, thinking about your thinking or the social environmental that help you with self-care?
For me, it's really more around longevity and, you know, looking to put myself and my vessel, if you will, my body in a position to be able to carry me through not just, you know, long quality of, or, but a quality of life. And so, you know, I have many more goals and desires and challenges and wishes that I want to experience in this lifetime. And so the big picture there is around well-being and longevity so that I can really enjoy the quality of life and have my body support all the different aspects of living a fulfilled life.
Sure. So when it comes to maybe there are things you started kind of practicing or experiencing at a young age. Maybe it's during the recession. Maybe it's now kind of in your current business, which again, we want to get into the some of the details of here in a minute. All the bottom-up stuff's great. How do you, and maybe it's natural for you, do you have intentional activities that help you regulate the stress, the pressure, the chaos, the ambiguity, and all the motions that comes with, right? Because the core theme here has been be willing to take it on and say yes to it, embrace it, leverage it, right? And then grow from it. And so you've had this disposition and you take care of the vessel. How do you take care of the mind, if at all, or maybe it's just natural for you?
Well, I think there are some buckets that I can take high level. So one is, you know, it's really around having a support network for me. So this is allows me to be able to leverage, you know, relationships, family, friends, peers, advisors, support, where I can talk and gain emotional support during uncertain times, right? There are tactical things, of course, Nick, like we were talking about. I do meditate regularly. I spend an hour a day in what I would call a spiritual practice. And now that I'm in South Florida, that includes going to the beach, but it's also meditation, it's quiet time, it's reading, it's writing, it's journaling. But I found that having that support network and then building in the communication really does support me from an emotional standpoint. That is not a day-to-day tactical kind of show up that way, but I do structure. I structure communication so that these things don't occur just randomly, that they occur out of an intent to also feed and fuel and take care of, you know, some of those challenges that come along with the type of performance that we're talking about.
Yeah. You just hit so many different, I think, kind of markers there of what we call well-being, or if you want to extend that all the way to human flourishing, but the meaning and spirituality piece, the social support or the relationship piece, obviously the deep work, kind of flowy achievement, take on hard things sort of piece, the physical health, checking a lot of boxes there. So I'm not surprised to hear it, but those are
one more that I'll add because it's privy to the work I, you know, that you and Adam are doing is having coaches and you know, having people who you trust, you know, you like, you respect to be able to talk to and talk through all the different things that, you know, come along with wanting to reach that level of optimum performance in the different areas of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our guests from episode 33, Robert Biswas-Diener, just put out an article today, I think, talking about the various benefits of coaching. And I think you're exactly right. Ideally, we would all have somebody to talk to, confide in, get perspective from, support from, have us ask good questions, those sorts of things. Well, yeah. So actually somewhat along those lines, maybe there's our natural segue. I want to come back to kind of the family and parenting. And, you know, I'm curious about the extent to which you may or may not strategically and thoughtfully try to help your kids learn some of these lessons or take on some of these hard things or build some of these skills that were instilled in you as a kid, but you also learned, you know, I'm going to say somewhat accidentally through your willingness to say yes and be optimistic and take things on, right? Did you go about that in a somewhat kind of meta or intentional way with your son and daughter?
Not in the beginning. No, I think many of us as young parents, you know, we just hold on, and there's no playbook and no rule book.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, strap on and go for the ride. Coming out of a hardship, it's different, because I think, like many parents, we want the best for our kids. We want them to have a better life and lifestyle than we've experienced. And a lot of that for me has been working with them on understanding the things that we're talking about, and also focusing on continuous learning and growth. So that's now very much a theme. You know, we of course have the value set and kind of ingrained that in them. And I would say that was from the beginning. But now I work, especially with my kids as they're entering into different stages of their life, about embracing that mindset for continuous learning and what that means and the value of having relationships inside of, you know, building that knowledge and combining that. So there is a lot of thought that I give that I want to pass on from my experiences that my kids can benefit from. And that also actually comes from part of the effective communication, right? So yes, it is, I would say, a blend of wanting to share ongoingly as things develop and unfold in our lives and being a part of that with your children. And then also a strategy about, hey, what have I learned that if I had my 23 or 21 year self now, that I could provide that knowledge, those lessons learned, and really what you want to leave behind with your children, right? That to me comes now more at the age of 60 about some legacy thinking and conversation as it might have in my, you know, 30s or 40s or 50s.
Have they been receptive to it?
In different ways.
In different ways.
You know, and it's also father, son, and you know, father, daughter, very dynamic and very different relationships. But if nothing else, I'll say this, that demonstrating by example and coming out of the hardship and showing them that I can rebuild, that if you apply yourself, that you can actually overcome any of the challenges that you hit in your life, that's more valuable than anything I can say to them. You know, demonstrate it, live it, experience it, show it. And I've done that. So that I'm with my kids, and I'm super proud of that. It's interesting, Nick, they were at one of the lowest points for me during this period of hardship. And I think it's a great lesson to share with you and with listeners. They were my purpose more than anything else.
Did that, then my assumption would be, significantly fuel your drive and motivation to create this change?
100%. Yeah, because there was a point where it was real clear that, and this is true, I think, with parents, that it's no longer about you. It's about your kids, right? I could have done something differently that might have gone in a different direction. That wasn't even an option for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so the actions then, and that's also an important aspect of something we didn't talk about much yet, which is purpose. Anti-fragile with a purpose is different than anti-fragile. There's a compounding component that it adds to be able to get past that resilience that we've talked about into a whole nother sphere of taking things beyond where you would have otherwise normally gone, because that's what is driving and fueling the opportunity to be purpose-driven.
Yeah. More likely to burn out and have some serious issues if you're dealing with constant adversity that requires anti-fragility and you don't have some sort of meaning or purpose behind it.
Agreed. Well said.
I'm curious. I'm thinking the name's eluding me at the moment. I think it's Dr. Lisa Darmore. Apologize if I'm getting the name wrong, but Blessings of a Skin Knee, Blessings of a B minus. These are books essentially about like let kids fall, right? Metaphorically speaking, or maybe literally speaking. I'm just curious because you mentioned purpose, right? I happen to know you well enough to know how much you love your kids and how much you value being a father. I spent a lot of time in schools and around parents and families and athletes and those sorts of things. And so many people are well-intended in that they want to never let their kids suffer. And I'm curious if you found yourself not just, you know, kind of leading by example in your change and your resilience and your transformation, but being a little bit more willing to let your kids scrape their knee a little bit here and there, so to speak, right? Or get that B minus here and there, whatever it might be, so that they had to start practicing this sort of mindset or skill set.
It's interesting, Nick. I think that one of the mistakes I made early on before really losing everything in this period of hardship was I gave my kids an amazing lifestyle. I enabled them to not feel any of that pain and discomfort. And then they felt it in a much more extreme way. And we had no choice about it at the time. But I just believe, you know, to be human is to suffer to some degree. And I think hardship in varying degrees is one of the greatest educators and motivators that there are for human beings. And so I'm much more akin to letting my kids experience challenges in the hope, of course, that they can learn their own lessons and some things just need to be learned the hard way in no matter how many teachings, mentors, you know, learnings, lessons may be. Some things just have to be learned on your own in their own time, in your own manner, right? In your own stage of development in life. So I'm much more akin to that. And I also, at the same time, you know, want to provide the best for my kids to have the opportunities for them to live, you know, a blessed life where they're fulfilled, right? Where they're really living large. And I don't mean financially large, just really living a rich, you know, experiential life. So those are a little bit out of duality for me in the sense that I want them to experience the challenges of life and learn how to overcome them. And I also feel, you know, somewhat in a privileged place now that I've come through the hardship to be able to provide them financial means to meet those opportunities that they might not otherwise have the ability to do on their own.
Well, listen, I mean, it's interesting you bring that up. I'm not sure there's an either or there. I mentioned Dr. Robert Biswas-Diener earlier in our conversation with him. You know, we talked about this concept of psychological richness. You just use the word rich, right? And we don't mean financial. Rich means full, right? To some extent. And full of what? Full of the range of life and emotional experiences, not just the good ones.
Well said. And it's inside of that range that I think you become, you know, an interesting person. Right. And then you become more interested in, you know, people and in the world, as opposed to, you know, often I think as the challenges in social media and with kids around our children's age, that they don't have as much experience in that human interaction with the diversity and the challenges that occur in life. It is not and or, it is an and, which I'm a big fan of. I'm even a bigger fan of and. All very positive.
Yeah, great. Well, listen, we want to be sensitive to your time. We're going to start to wrap up here. I do have kind of one or two more questions for you. You know, we'll introduce you at the start of the episode and kind of gone through, you know, your many accomplishments and what you're doing now. But I want to give you a little bit of time to talk about your current projects, your newly released book, which has hit some bestsellers lists. I want you to be able to mention and where people can find you. Before that, you know, we always have what we kind of loosely call a flourishing question. We're going to adapt it for this special series on anti-fragility. And I'm going to ask you simply, any adult out there listening that's thinking about how might I do this in my parenting? How might I do this in my professional life? How might I continue to grow, evolve, take on difficult stuff, be anti-fragile? If you had to try to reduce it down to what the one thing is that's most important or most foundational, right, for you and your experience of anti-fragility, what do you think that is, and how might people do it?
That's to pause, Nick, because it's hard for me to think of a one. Yeah, I would say this. Uncertainty is inevitable in life. It's a constant. And I don't think it's an option, but I think it's a necessary to embrace that uncertainty in order to expand yourself and live a much richer, fuller life. So go beyond that it's necessary, or that it's optional, but understand that it's necessary to embrace uncertainty to get to the other side and live an anti-fragile life.
Yeah, love it. Thoughts on how to do that?
I do. I mean, I think there are tips and techniques around that, many of which we've discussed here today. The first one that hits my mind is to reclassify the situation.
Mm, love that. Great praise.
And take it from a problem to an opportunity. That alone, Nick, if we all could do more of that, step back, reclassify, reposition problem to opportunity to possibility, that's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Boom. That's a good mic drop moment. Well said. Yeah. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing currently. Tell them about the book, where they can find you, where they can connect with you. You got a lot of cool stuff going on.
Yeah, I'm happy about sharing that with the audience. So I'm the CEO of Exchange Listing. We are an IPO advisory firm. So I work with companies that are going to be listing in the United States on a senior exchange, such as NASDAQ, the New York Stock Exchange. We take them through a process of preparing and executing and completing successfully in initial public offerings. I also run a small boutique fund called MS Capital, which is open to accredited investors, where we invest in pre-IPO companies. And finally, you know, I'm an author, and I publish. I just recently published my debut book, which is called The Entrepreneur's IPO, which is really organized around an educational gap for entrepreneurs who wish one day to pursue an IPO and have a practical understanding of what it would take to do so. I'm in the middle of working on my second book, which is geared towards investors who are interested in the IPO market. You can really follow me and connect with me on LinkedIn. Feel free to DM me there. I love to engage with entrepreneurs. I love to engage with people of like mind. And so you can find me at LinkedIn and feel free to touch base. And that's where I am.
Perfect. Love it. Yeah, exciting stuff. And I'm looking forward to digging the book at some point as well. And really happy for its success so far. Yeah, it's amazing. Awesome. Peter, this was really, really great. I know you're wildly busy. You got a lot of different things going on. So being able to and willing to spend this hour with us is deeply appreciated. And I think you shared a lot of really interesting ideas and approaches that hopefully will help our audience on their path to anti-fragility.
Thanks for having me, Nick. And that's what it's all about, right? If there's, you know, some benefit and value that comes out of this time together, that's my hope. I love what you're doing and Adam as well, and look forward to supporting and hearing more about our efforts in the future.
Awesome. Appreciate you, Peter. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to Flourish FM. We hope you enjoyed the content. Please be sure to leave us a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast and on all major social media platforms.
And if you visit our website, flourishfmpodcast.com, you can sign up to our newsletter. We send out a weekly newsletter. First newsletter of every month, we share a long form blog, and every newsletter every week, we share highlights from our previous episodes. Please hit subscribe on our website.